the watch list, right, Tim?
Yep.
Sounds like Wellington should stay on there, and they just got on, and now they should be added for performance and personnel change.
Well, you certainly have that option. The guiding light here with the watch list update has been what is critical at this point. We're aware, you heard Ed say, we've got the implementation of the FFP upcoming. That's going to involve a lot of moving pieces, a lot of mapping of portfolios to some new spots. So there will be inevitably some turnover in that process. The mental shortcut that we've used internally on the watch list has been, do we see something that's going to endanger performance over the next 6 months or so? If this is something where there's just a higher and better use, we've left that to, you know, we'll wrap that up in the FFP implementation. So this is the critical pieces. So you have Nogales, which has been on watch since 2008. We've had that discussion with the board. We said just leave it on there until it's fully wound down. Down to its last asset. It's going to be there for about another year until we get the final policy documents, but essentially it's wound down and we're in cleanup mode now. Certainly no reason to take them off watch, but it's not a critical point for the board to focus on a quarterly basis. The other one the board recently placed on watch was Wellington. That was due to the personnel change. Rick Worcester, Jerry, as you pointed out, performance likewise was really, really tough during the quarter. We've gotten to know Steve Gorman, the new portfolio manager. Steve Gorman does have a more risk-controlled process than Rick did. We would expect a lower volatility profile going forward, essentially. And Rick has, or I'm sorry, Steve Gorman, the new portfolio manager, has pointed out that some of the paired relative value trades, including the short Brazil that Ed highlighted, is not part of his process, prospectively. So we expect that, you know, the loss in the quarter will be baked in. We don't expect a big rebound from that, but we expect prospectively a lower volatility profile. The board can place Wellington on watch for performance as well, but I think we have a bigger discussion over the next 6 months about whether they have a role under FFP. And it's probably better use of the board's time to spend the time talking about whether they have a role in FFP than is this performance a critical concern in the short term.
Okay.
You highlighted William Blair and Jackson Square Partners as two who had underperformed significantly in the quarter. Again, we're taking a look at this and saying, on William Blair, this is explainable by process. On Jackson Square, this is a pattern we have seen in the past. You recall back in 2008 and 2009, a similar event occurred with MGM, I believe it was. They had a thesis that the gaming industry was on a growth path. They had a position there. We started going into the global financial crisis. The stock came down, down, down. They took a look at this and said, price is coming down, we still see growth, and they held it for too long. It's a mistake they've made in the past. They have tended to rebound from it, so we don't see this as a massive deviation from past practice. They do tend to buy into positions that are underperforming. It largely works out over time. Clearly not on this individual position. But again, we would see, you know, you've got a dramatically lower domestic equity target allocation under FFP than you do today. There's going to be a conversation about consolidation. We'd say better, you know, better to have the conversation about Jackson Square's role under that consolidation conversation. So we're not recommending any changes to the watch list at this time.
If we weren't transitioning to FFP, would we have that discussion about Jackson Square?
I think it would rise to the level that would, yeah, that would be a natural point. If there wasn't something big looming on the horizon that would sweep it up anyways, we'd be having that discussion.
Okay.
We make our decision based upon a style, and this is an organization that is now proving itself to be a style flexor, depending upon market conditions. But that's not the basis on which we made the selection. We went with a growth style, and now they're saying,
yeah, it's well, sort of the do as I say, not as I do.
No, do as I said today, not as I said yesterday.
Or as I told you last year, or whatever. Yeah. And that's the concern, was the, you know, you get pitched on an approach, philosophy, a discipline, the associated rigor, and then you find out,
it's whatever.
We're just going to buy it on the way down because we believe in it.
So whatever. And to be fair to Jackson Square or to others that we see in this kind of situation, categorizing yourself as a growth or value manager is kind of an artificial construct, because when you value a stock, you basically do the same thing. You have every value manager has some outlook of how fast this company is growing. They have to. They have to have some assumption about the future. And every growth manager has to look at today's price versus what they think it's worth to come up with, should I buy it or not?
Right.
So they both are growth and they both are value. It's kind of what they like to benchmark themselves against, which pool, and they're benchmarking themselves against the Russell 1000 growth. So yeah. It kind of looks, they look at companies that are in this universe more. So they get to know them really well. They have their 31 companies that they invest in, and they probably are looking at another 100 that they are considering or have invested in the past. They get to know them really well, and then they follow the story and they say, like, wow, I still like what's going on here. Categorize it however you want. I think the stock is going to recover. That is typically the mindset.
Yeah, my translation is they lose their objectivity, it sounds like to me. That's what I'm hearing from that.
Yeah.
I think that's the concern. They've always had a somewhat malleable definition of how they get to a growth story. And certainly a cheap entry point to a growth story is much more attractive. The conversation we've had with them over the years has been, how do you avoid falling in love with these on the way down and buying them all the way down? Over their full track record, they have made money doing this. They've had a couple notable misses. We're seeing a notable miss right now.
I have a question.
Does it concern us that they see Enron as an opportunity?
I have a question I'd like you to pose to them.
Good entry point.
And you could do that over the phone. I'd like you to call them and ask them if anybody has pulled out of their fund in the last 2 months. And if so, how much?
We get that information on a quarterly basis from every investment manager.
When will you be getting it next?
For the second quarter, we'd be getting that information in late July. But we certainly call them and get an update on real time what's going on.
Yeah, please. I want to find out if other people are as worried about it as we seem to be talking about.
You're talking about April, May?
Yeah.
We'd get an internal update. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay.
Enron's a value play.
Okay. That concludes my remarks, unless there's any other questions from the board.
Further items on number 11? If not, I think we're back to...